Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
We must not make a scarecrow of the law. Setting it up to fear the birds of prey and let it keep one shape till custom make it their perch and not their terror.
Aye, but yet let us be keen and rather cut a little than fall and bruise to death. Alas, this gentleman whom I would save had a most noble father. Let but your honour know, whom I believe to be most straight in virtue, that in the working of your own affections, had time cohered with place or place with wishing, or that the resolute acting of your blood could have attained the effect of your own purpose, whether you had not sometime in your life erred in this point, which now you censure him and pulled the law upon you.
'Tis one thing to be tempted, Aeschylus, another thing to fall.
Hello and welcome to The Play's the Thing, your podcast for all things Shakespeare. You have joined us for Act Two of Measure for Measure, one of Shakespeare's hidden gems. That was an exchange between Angelo, who is now in charge of Venice, and Aeschylus, his kind of right-hand man, in which Angelo at the beginning of the scene says, "We must not make a scarecrow of the law." You know, it can't just be like this something that sits in a field and doesn't really frighten anyone. And then he closes by saying, after Aeschylus says, "Hey, be careful about punishing this man, Claudio, too hard. You're made of the same stuff." And Angelo responds, "'Tis one thing to be tempted, Aeschylus, another thing to fall." There's a little bit of foreshadowing there by Shakespeare. I am joined again by Galen Hurd, and hopefully you've listened to Act One and you know that Galen Hurd is my wife. Hey, Galen, thanks for coming back to the show.
Of course. Happy to be here.
I think we should start, before we really get into Measure for Measure, with a little bit of parenting corner. I think if our audience would like to just get right into the play, skip forward a little bit.
Oh, before we start parenting corner, though,
yeah.
You said Venice. It's Vienna. We're in Vienna for this.
Of course, right. Right. Thank you. Yeah. They both start with a V. They're pretty different cities and pretty different locations. Good catch. Thank you. Hey, let's talk about where you are and where I am and where our baby is and what, like, the recent turn of events. Okay, so I'll start with me. I am in an office space about three blocks from our house. Where are you, Galen?
I'm in our living room, which is also our kitchen and our dining room. It's all one room.
And you're talking kind of quietly because the baby is not far away.
I shouldn't. I can speak freely. She is in her own room, but she is sleeping. And the exciting news is that she slept 10 straight hours last night. That's the first time
ever. She's 9 months old. Mm-hmm. This has happened. We do not remember sleeping through the night with this girl since like maybe 4 months old.
And I think that happened two nights and then it's over.
Right. And so we've been exhausted zombie parents for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And we got 10 hours last night. So we're over the moon.
We're flying high.
Really high. High enough to do a podcast about Shakespeare's second act of Measure for Measure at 8:30 p.m. That's how flying high we are.
Yeah. I'm not even tired. Are you tired?
I'm going to get there pretty quickly. I think this is going to do me in. At the end of the last episode of Act One, one of the things that you mentioned was that Shakespeare set us up in Act One to look for this big clash between opposites. The opposites being Angelo, who we heard in this audio, and Isabella. Isabella is a nun. We met at the end of Act One. She's being recruited by Lucio. Lucio is the friend of Isabella's brother, Claudio. Claudio has been arrested for getting his fiancée pregnant. They had plans to get married. Now she's pregnant. Claudio is in jail, and Claudio is going to die. This is not like a mild imprisonment, a fine, or anything like that. But Angelo, who's taken over Vienna for the Duke has now kind of gone into hiding, and he's actually secretly spying on Angelo and on the city. Angelo has arrested Claudio, and he has sentenced him to death. Lucio has summoned Isabella. Please, Isabella, use your rhetorical powers to speak on your behalf of your brother and save him. And so this is the act in which these two are going to meet. This was the big thing that you were looking for in this act, Galen. And we should remind listeners, you were just taking this act by act. You did not like watch or read the whole play before you go into this. So maybe without giving too much away, were your expectations met in this clash of opposites between Angelo and Isabella? Angelo, this like the strict, you know, law of righteousness man, and Isabella, the pious female, but has a much more balanced view of the law and of discipline. Were your expectations met in this clash?
I think it was maybe more dramatic than I expected.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. I mean, I maybe expected drama, a different kind of drama. I expected like a real more tension or more for each of them to hold their positions really strongly. I
feel
like Angelo, he held his position pretty strongly, but caved so completely.
Yeah.
I was sort of, it's like watching a man just like crumple to the ground.
Right. Right.
Who probably thought himself to be so strong and sure.
Yeah.
Of his position and his way of looking at the world. Did not surprise me that Isabella did not crumple.
Yeah.
That she stayed pretty strong. So,
This act, Galen, this is for me one of the best acts that Shakespeare ever wrote. For me, it's up there with Hamlet Act One, with Macbeth Act Two. I could kind of like make a list, but it bore everyone. I think that the kind of rhetorical firepower in this act is hard to match by anything that Shakespeare wrote, and he wrote some great acts. Mm-hmm. I think that the kind of dexterity with that each of these two characters argue their case, it's kind of like you believe, or at least I do, I believe whoever talks last makes the best case, you know? Like, we're already kind of frustrated with Angelo because he's arrested Claudio. He's being so heavy-handed as a punishment. No one believes he's being just. Everyone believes he's being unjust. Mm-hmm. So we're already kind of tipped away from him. And still, when I listen to him describe what the law ought to do, how it's not being executed in that way in Vienna, and how he is going to step in and make it right as a goodness, as a righteousness, as a kindness to the whole city, I'm like, yeah, that's great. And then Isabella steps in, and whatever she says, okay, and I want to say she has a real central belief in her argument. And her central belief is not neglect of the law.
No.
It's mercy.
Yeah.
In spite of the law.
Yeah.
And that's what she keeps arguing for.
Yeah.
And she gets done and you're like, oh my gosh, how could he possibly refute her? Mm-hmm. And then he comes back and his arguments are so strong. Yeah. So I just think it is such a scintillating scene. Anyone who appreciates kind of courtroom drama, and I think this is kind of set up to be two, like a lead prosecutor and a lead defendant on their absolute best day with in a high stakes affair, mm-hmm. and each of them is functioning at the top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
Which, you know, both of them functioning at the top of their game makes Angelo falling for Isabella more believable.
Right.
It's like everyone, you know, is looking for a worthy adversary. Like
a
great man is looking for a worthy adversary. And
And that's exactly right. It's funny because Aeschylus, the kind of right-hand man of Angelo, I think makes good arguments to him, right? Mm-hmm. But he kind of brushes them off. Mm-hmm. But then when Isabella steps on the scene, partly because I think we're meant to see that she's beautiful, there's probably something attractive to her because she's forbidden. She's entering she's in a nunnery and she is going to take holy orders as soon as she kind of like hopefully clears up this mess with Claudio. So there's something about, I think, that she's beautiful, that she's forbidden, and of course, she's his absolute equal, if not superior, in
rhetorically.
That's exactly right. Before we talk about the big change of the scene, I don't want you to lose your spot. Before we talk about the big change in the scene, which is Angelo has a change of heart about her, I want to play some audio just because I want the audience to hear just how impressive these two are when they're functioning. So there's two meetings in this act between Isabella and Angelo. This is from the first one. And I'm going to just read a couple of Isabella's lines. You'll hear them in the middle of this audio. Well, believe this, no ceremony that to great ones longs not the king's crown, nor the deputed sword, the marshal's truncheon, nor the judge's robe, become them with one half so good a grace as mercy does. This is the kernel of her argument. No ceremony, you know, no fear of the marshal or the judge's robe does so much grace, provides so much grace as mercy does. Let's listen to the whole audio.
Must he needs die?
Maiden, no remedy.
Yes, I do think that you might pardon him, and neither heaven nor man grieve at the mercy.
I will not do it.
But can you if you would?
Look, what I will not, that I cannot do.
But might you do it and do the world no wrong? If so, your heart were touched with that remorse as mine is to him.
He's sentenced. 'Tis too late.
You are to go.
Too late? Why, no, I that do speak a word may call it back again. Well, believe this. No ceremony that to great ones longs. Not the king's crown, nor the deputed sword, the marshal's truncheon, nor the judge's robe, become them with one half so good a grace as mercy does. If he had been as you and you as he, you would have slipped like him, but he, like you, would not have been so stern.
Pray you be gone.
I would to heaven I had your potency and you were Isabel. Should it then be thus? No. I would tell what were to be a judge and what a prisoner.
I touch him, there's the vein.
Your brother is a forfeit of the law, and you but waste your words.
Alas, alas, why all the souls that were forfeit once? And he that might the vantage best have took found out the remedy. How would you be if he, which is the top of judgment, should but judge you as you are? Oh, think on that, and mercy then will breathe within your lips like man new made.
Be you content, fair maid, it is the law, not I, condemn your brother. Were he my kinsman, brother, or my son, it should be thus with him. He must die tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh, that sudden, spare him, spare him. He's not prepared for death. Even for our kitchens we kill the fowl of season. Shall we serve heaven with less respect than we do minister to our gross selves? Good, good, my lord, bethink you. Who is it that hath died for this offence? As many have committed it.
Ay, well said.
The law hath not been dead, though it hath slept.
That was the first exchange between Isabella and Angelo, in which Isabella learns that her brother is going to die tomorrow. And Angelo kind of makes his case. The law hath not been dead, though it hath slept. Okay. Galen, here's my question for you. You're a trained therapist. This is part of the reason that you enjoy Shakespeare so much, because this is he's a master psychologist.
Fantastic characters, yeah.
Fantastic. Speaking as a therapist, what are the things that you see in Isabella? She strikes me as healthy, like. And as emblematic a character of grace as we see in all of Shakespeare, what are the things that stick out to you the most?
Well, I mean, I'll just start by saying, like, speaking as a therapist really feels to me like just speaking as a human being.
Because that's who you are, right?
Yeah, and just like, I just feel like I'm just someone who's curious about people. But
yeah.
So I don't know if any of this is coming from my training, but she does just feel like somebody who, it doesn't feel like there's a lot hidden about her. Like,
oh. She
seems, you imagine that what you hear from her, what you see is what you get. There's this sense of, integrity, like the inner and the outer line up, which I think is one of the markers of psychological health.
That what's on the outside and what's on the inside are the same. There's not a great disparity between those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's got to be true of Isabella. She might on occasion be tactical about what she says. She doesn't just say everything.
Yes.
But that's very different than what you're talking about.
That's like some maturity, world-wise.
Right, right.
But no, she seems clear. There's a clarity.
Right.
At least what we've been shown so far.
Yeah. I remember my mom saying to me that my mom and I butted heads growing up all the time. We butted heads. And my dad and I, and so she would go to my dad when I was a kid and she would say, "Oh my gosh, that son of ours is so difficult." Mm-hmm. And dad was like, "I don't think so, because I always know where he is." Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he might not like what we're telling him to do. He might not like the rules or whatever, but he's like totally frank about it, you know? It was a huge compliment.
It is.
Because everyone can like find you. There's a sort of simplicity and an honesty about being found, and Isabella surely has that.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that you lack complexity or that there's not an inner world that has depth. It means that you have some level of integrity in the sense of the word that means your inner and your outer worlds are integrated.
Yeah.
Not the sense of like being a good person or a moral person, but a kind of integrity that means you, your parts fit together in a way that fits, that is aligned. It's cool.
After this scene, Angelo says to Isabella and Lucio, "I want Isabella to come back." And Isabella does return, this time without Lucio. and it's just the two of them. We learn between their first meeting and their second meeting that Angelo has been smitten by her, absolutely smitten by her. And now he has a problem. If he follows through on the execution of Claudio, he'll never be with this woman. And he seems to believe he might be able to be with this woman. And so when she returns, he's developed a plan. And the plan is, it's awful. We know about it as the audience, but she does not know about it. So there's a bit of dramatic irony happening in the scene. And we're waiting for her to find out from Angelo's mouth what exactly his proposal is. Mm-hmm. So, Galen, what's the proposal that he puts forward to Isabella?
I mean, he says, if you lie with me as Juliet did with Claudio,
yeah,
then you can save your brother, essentially, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He starts by asking, would you do this to save your brother?
Right.
And that's where we get the hint that this is what he wants.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's just a hypothetical question. Takes a minute to catch on to what's going on.
So he, being very well versed in the law, puts forward this very sophisticated, intricate sort of argument about, like, one sin, sleeping with me, can wipe clean another sin, the sin of your brother Claudio and Juliet, and the kind of two can sort of offset each other. It's both like sophisticated and a little bit labyrinthine. How do you say that word? Like a labyrinth, you know, that it's like really difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
And when she kind of realizes it, she has in some ways, she said, like, yes, I would give my body in order to save my brother. But she doesn't realize quite what that means to him. I would give my body. And then when she realizes it, she says quickly, no, what you're really asking me to do is to give my soul.
Yeah.
Not just my body, but to give my soul. And that I can never do. Mm-hmm. It's electric.
It's fantastic.
It's electric. It's so good. Actually, let's play the audio. This is another, it's the second exchange between Isabella and Angelo. This time, the stakes have gotten even higher as Angelo propositions Isabella with a way to save her brother.
Nay, I'll not warrant that, for I can speak against the thing I say. Answer to this. I, now the voice of the recorded law, pronounce a sentence on your brother's life. Might there not be a charity in sin to save this brother's life?
Please you to do it. I'll take it as a peril to my soul. It is no sin at all, but charity.
Pleased you to do it at peril of your soul were equal poise of sin and charity.
That I do beg his life. If it be sin, heaven let me bear it. You granting of my suit, if that be sin, I'll make it my morn prayer to have it added to the faults of mine and nothing of your answer.
Nay, but hear me, your sense pursues not mine. Either you are ignorant or seem so crafty, and that's not good.
Let me be ignorant and in nothing good, but graciously to know I am no better.
Thus wisdom wishes to appear most bright when it doth tax itself. As these black masks proclaim an enshield beauty 10 times louder than beauty could displayed. But mark me, to be received plain, I'll speak more gross. Your brother is to die.
Sir.
And his offence is so, as it appears, accountant to the law upon that pain.
True.
Admit no other way to save his life, as I subscribe not that nor any other, but in the loss of question, that you, his sister, finding yourself desired of such a person whose credit with the judge or own great place could fetch your brother from the manacles of the all-binding law, and that there were no earthly mean to save him, but that either you must lay down the treasures of your body to this supposed, or else to let him suffer, what would you do?
Oh, as much for my poor brother as myself. That is, Were I under the terms of death, the impression of keen whips I'd wear as rubies, and strip myself to death as to a bed that longing have been sick for, ere I'd yield my body up to shame.
Then must your brother die?
And 'twere the cheaper way. Better it were a brother died at once, than that a sister, by redeeming him, should die forever.
That was Angelo and Isabella. Isabella concluding with, better it were a brother died at once than that a sister, by redeeming him, should die forever. She plainly sees that her soul is at stake here, and she refuses him. She refuses Angelo. And that's how this act is going to close. I do want to visit a couple of minor characters before we close this podcast. But Galen, here's the big question. You said, and I think I agree with you, in Act One, that Angelo was kind of a true believer, that he was not, by adapting this hard stance, he wasn't just playing a role. He wasn't just being like the cleanup reformer. No, he bought what he was doing. Like, in his heart, he bought it. Now, he has had a change. After this encounter with Isabella, he plainly bends the law to his whim, to his will. There's even there's this wonderful line. Isabella, kind of in a quiet moment, says, he hath made the law curtsy to his will. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful line. Like, yeah, he seemed to care about the law, but what he's really doing is making the law kind of bow to just whatever he personally desires.
Yeah.
So he was a true believer in Act One. Now, he seems like he's willing to kind of do anything with the law to get what he wants, and what he wants is Isabella. What caused the change?
Yeah. I mean, that moment I referred to where you're just watching a man crumple.
Yeah.
After she leaves the first time.
Yes.
And he just seems like his whole world is falling apart. Like, he, this totally took him by surprise. He did not expect to want someone he shouldn't want. In other words, like, his sense of the law seemed to hinge on himself being infallible.
Mm.
Because it hinged on something that was not true.
Yeah.
It's fallible.
Yeah.
He was so distraught by this sort of unwanted desire. That
yeah.
Had,
yeah.
And wrong desire. And so it breaks. It's like, this is what rigidity does. Break when there's not room to flex. Whereas she had more room to flex. And what's so interesting to me is that she's like, she's firm when she needs to be firm. She's like,
right.
Absolutely not. This is my soul at stake. Like, you, no way. But she doesn't apply the same thing to Claudio and Juliet. And sort of on the outside of it, it's, they're both, you know, lying with someone outside of marriage, which
right.
is not right. But she sees that with Claudio and Juliet, that's a completely different situation.
Yeah.
So, but to be out of, to do what would really be wrong would be betraying herself.
Uh-huh.
Not only, I don't think she would only be betraying God. I think she'd be betraying herself.
For sure.
And
for sure.
That she absolutely will not do. She's just able to see so much clearer.
But absolutely.
Getting back.
Absolutely.
You asked what makes the change.
Yeah.
What made the change. I think it's that. I think the disillusionment he felt and the surprise he felt at himself. He didn't know himself. And when that happened, he also says, she is so good.
Mm-hmm.
His desire is wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he wants her because she's so good. And that seems to sort of trip him up too.
Yeah.
Like, she's good, but she's awakening something in me that is bad.
Right.
And
right.
Is it her fault or is it my fault?
Right. And it's like in his monologue before she comes back, I think he sees the fault as his.
Yeah.
And then later he turns it at her. She's the one who's tempted him. The blame is at her.
Isn't that what people do?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I was talking to a friend recently about how difficult, how awful it is when you realize you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
It's like you've got ink on you and it's like burning your skin and you have to get it off you. Mm. And the most pleasurable way to get it off you is to put it on somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know?
Certainly the quickest, yeah.
And it's the quickest solution.
Yeah.
To put it on somebody else. Yeah. And sadly enough, the person that you most often put it onto is the person who's most near at hand.
Yeah.
And is oftentimes the person you care for the most, you know?
Yeah. And in so I think in some ways he is almost trying to his proposal is almost to try to sully her.
Yes.
The power she has that he is just in awe of is that she's truly good.
Uh-huh.
She's not rigidly following a set of rules. She's actually truly good. And I think to some degree he might want to bring her down a notch, sadly.
Absolutely. It reminds me, I think it's a Mark Twain quote. It's attributed to a lot of different people. Help me if I don't get it quite right, but about when you fight a pig, you have to get in the mud and the pig likes it. Oh. It's like you know the quote that I'm talking about?
I don't.
But it's kind of a way of saying, if you fight someone like Isabella fighting with Angelo, someone who's kind of like below her, who's like in the mud of his desire and it's like unrestrained and it's causing him to propose this terrible thing to her. In order to fight with him, she has to kind of get in the mud. And to get in the mud, he likes it. He likes her to be in the mud with him.
Mm-hmm. It brings her down to his level a little bit.
Right. And it's oddly gratifying, I think, to him.
Okay, that makes me think about this moment that really surprised me in Isabella when she says, okay, now you have to let my brother go. Otherwise, I'll tell everyone
right.
What you're doing. Like, and he says, you know, who would believe you over me? But I see that as a little bit of her getting in the mud with him.
That surprised you.
It surprised me a little bit. Clearly, I have Isabella up on a pedestal.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. It might just have been strategic and smart and like what any sort of human would do. But I don't know. To my mind, I would have expected her to rise above that and not sort of blackmail him the way that he's blackmailing her.
It felt like she was stooping to his level.
Just a tiny bit.
And I was quick to come to her defense, like, yeah, strategically speaking.
Yeah, her brother's life is at stake. I need to, like, remember, she will do anything that within reason to.
Yeah.
The stakes are pretty high.
The quote is from Mark Twain, "Don't wrestle with pigs. You both get dirty and the pig likes it." It's a great line.
It is.
I want to talk briefly about a couple of other characters. The Duke is still kind of lingering in the background of the play. So he's dressed now as a friar. He's kind of undercover and he's moving about the side streets of Vienna, keeping an eye on things. And at one point he goes to prison where he meets Juliet. So they have a conversation. Juliet, the fiance of Claudio, who's
last
doomed to die.
When are we going to see Juliet? What are we
right?
Of Juliet? Yeah,
right. We see her briefly, but she expresses like that she loves Claudio, that she's repentant, and she also learns that Claudio must die. So the Duke, moving in the background, is kind of gathering evidence about what's going on. And it seems like, from what we've heard thus far, Juliet has got the absolute right demeanor, attitude, disposition toward this whole thing. Mm. She loves her fiance. She's penitent about it.
Yeah.
And the Duke is like, we don't hear a lot from the Duke, but we're kind of like,
we can imagine that he's seeing this.
Say it again.
We can imagine that he's seeing this. He's really seeing the situation up close.
Right.
He's getting a sense of who Juliet is and what their situation is.
So
he knows what he'll do with it.
Looking toward Act Three, everything is set up. Claudio is going to die, and Isabella is surely going to see Claudio in this next act.
Yeah.
For me, one of the big questions is she going to tell him about this proposal that Angelo put before her? Like, hey, you can save his life, but you have to sleep with me. Is she even going to tell him that?
100% she is.
Okay. Now, why do you think that 100% she's going to tell him that?
Because there's this little bit of foreshadowing at the end of the act where she's like, she says, oh, my brother would much sooner die than have me betray myself in this way. You know, like, I know my brother will agree with my decision here.
Yeah.
And it's just such a like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Okay.
The fireworks are set up. The fuse is about to be lit in Act Three.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens.
Like, for sure. I mean, I have no idea what else is going to happen because it feels very like the playing field feels very open right now. But for sure, she's going to tell him about it. And I think she's going to be disappointed. I think a man
you do
his life.
Okay.
A fiance and a baby behind is going to be like, girl, are you sure?
Desperate times calls for desperate acts.
Are you sure?
Okay. That's a great prophetic word. We'll see what happens. Hey, I'm going to say to our listeners two things. First, this podcast is platformed by the Circe Institute, C-I-R-C-E, the Circe Institute. They are at the vanguard of the classical renewal movement that is getting more and more momentum behind it. Galen and I, we have a 9-month-old baby. We talk all the time about wanting her to get a classical education, the kind of education that we only got in fragments. If you would like to learn more about the classical movement, go to Circe Institute. Again, that's C-I-R-C-E, institute.org, and learn. There's so much to learn there. Secondly, I teach Shakespearean acting in addition to hosting this podcast. And I have a website if you are at all curious in a kind of novel approach to teaching Shakespeare, teaching acting Shakespeare. The website is timteachesshakespeare.com. And if you are in the market for good scenes to perform in your class or with your family, you will find a series of free scenes on my website, timteachesshakespeare.com. Next week, we are looking forward to being with you for Act Three, in which we will meet Claudio again, in which we will surely, says Galen, find out how he's going to respond when Isabella tells him about the proposal that Angelo has made. Galen, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Ben.
See you back at the house.
All right.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.